everyone, and a very warm, literally, welcome to the final CBI at 10 before we break for the summer. I'm Liz Mosley, and I'm an editor at Tortoise, and we very often host these things, and it's lovely to be here today with a lineup of fascinating people who are going to help us try and navigate through the cost of living situation with which everybody is trying to deal, both as individuals in our houses and our families, and as people who are leading businesses too. From the CBI today is Saima Kulati-Aldridge. Hi Saima, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Before we kick off with our invited experts, let's just get a bit of a scene setter as we always do. It's not been a quiet week for politics. Where are we in terms of all that stuff and what the CBI has been doing around it?
So when I was thinking about what I might say and update and open with, anything that I was thinking about was getting out of date quite quickly. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to talk too much about the politics. We should know who the final two are this week. And then, you know, we'll move into Conservative member elections over the summer with a new prime minister in place by the 5th of September. So that's where we are on that. And I think I'm not going to go in any further because it'll be out of date too quickly. What I would like to say, though, is the thing that is energising me about this leadership campaign is we need to be in peak economy and we're in peak politics. And that is frustrating. However, growth is back on the table. The candidates are fighting a leadership election on growth. They're all talking about it. Everybody is being judged on their economic plan. And that is where people are spending most of their time when they're having those conversations. I find that really encouraging. That is exactly where we need them to be. What I would say is that has to be immediately followed up with action from day one, right? That can't be lots of things that sound really good at a dispatch box but don't land in a boardroom. It's got to be both. So whoever comes in has got a real challenge about hitting the ground running. And that is what we're doing at the CBI. So when all those officials are writing their day one packs for new ministers who are coming in, we will be inputting, we will be supporting, we will be making sure that when those new ministers and when that new government comes in from day one, they know what we need and they will be able to take action to do so.
Indeed. I mean, predictions are a fool's game anyway, so I think you're wise to avoid that, Saima. Let's move to the sort of core of what we're trying to talk about today, which is about this cost of living crisis. I think it's probably is right to call it a crisis. Sometimes that word gets bandied around, but it's a challenge for people and for businesses. What's been the response of CBI members so far? Just before we went live, you mentioned some really interesting examples of people who've really got on the front foot, businesses doing really meaningful things that are going to help people get through the sort of immediate, you know, through the summer holidays, if you like. Just tell us what we're already seeing, what's already changing.
So there's been some really, really fantastic examples that we've seen from members, both on helping their employees with the cost of living, but also helping their customers with the cost of living. So in terms of the employee side, we've seen people putting up wages of shop floor workers or providing shuttle buses and things like that to people that have to use their own cars. So there's been some stuff like that. Most firms are doing what they can. And when I talk to businesses, when I talk to our members, this is the number one priority for them, is how do they protect their consumers and how do they protect their staff. And this is coming off the back of a pandemic in the middle of the war in Ukraine, which is, you know, businesses are having to constantly adapt and innovate. And this is, they are again adapting and innovating. So you asked me to bring in some examples. So kind of I'll bring in a few different ones. So on the kind of help to eat side of things, we have people like Asda and IKEA, a Beef Eater and Brewers Fair, who are providing really heavily discounted meals for children during the summer holidays. And for some of them, there's no need for us, for example, no need for a paying adult. Like, you can just feed the kids, which is positive. And then in terms of the government has announced cost of living payments in May, and members such as Pay UK and PayPoint are working together, like their online payment platforms, and they will be helping to administer the energy rebates and the council tax returns.
Right. So people get the cash quicker, basically.
Exactly, exactly. And one of our water companies, Severn Trent, they've launched a £30 million fund to help customers with their bills. And if you households on the lower income can seek up to 90% reduction in their bills. So, you know, there is a lot of stuff out there. I would just to wrap it up, though, before others come in, where prices are going up for consumers and for people, they're also going up for business. Energy costs that are going up for people, they're also going up for business. There's inflation, there's wage pressures, there's a lot of pressure out there for business. So it's encouraging that within that context, businesses are still doing as much as they are to support, but there are still things that they will need. It's been good to see the recovery loan scheme movement this week, because that is one of the things that we've been really calling on government for, to help with immediate cash flow. But it comes back to what I was saying at the beginning. The CBI last week, we launched our plan for growth that the new government should take heed of, and that is something that we will continue to be pushing. But that's what they need to be doing. This isn't going to get any easier over the rest of the year. This is not, you look at where the economy is going, this isn't getting easier. The cost of living crisis is not going to go away. We need to grow our economy. So there's one hand, you need to be protecting the most vulnerable and supporting the people who need support. And on the other hand, you need to be growing the economy to make sure that any downturn is short and shallow. Just to end, we have launched a cost of doing business playbook, which you find on our website. But this is kind of practical advice for business who are struggling with the cost of doing business. So I just wanted to highlight that as well.
Thanks ever so much, Simon. And hopefully as we get into the conversation today, we can start looking at those kind of short-term fixes and long-term adjustments, or even medium-term if we think about the winter when things are going to change over again. And I'm delighted to have with us today David Buttress, who is the founder and former CEO of Just Eat and is in week four of his new position as the government's new cost of living czar. So he's figured out where to put his coat and how the photocopier works. But I'm interested to know, David, just explain to us what being a cost of living czar entails. What is this role going to be and do?
The reason why I sort of accepted the role and what am I doing is probably twofold. One is because I've obviously spent, you know, over 20 years of my life in private business and enterprise, and I care passionately about it, building companies, working with CEOs and boards to hopefully build successful companies. And secondly, because, you know, where I come from and where I grew up, you know, was a tough area. And I can see, like all of us can see, that this cost of living pressure is very real and it will hit people pretty hard over the next 6 months. And so my role is to see what I can do working with business to mitigate where possible and to amplify the good work that business is already doing. Because let's not forget that there's lots of great work already happening, which has nothing to do with me, nothing to do with government. But what we can do as government is to amplify that work, and where appropriate then unashamedly ask if we can do a bit more, given we're in a sort of unique, I would say, certainly in my professional lifetime, a unique challenge around inflation and rising supply costs, etc., that obviously Simon has already articulately referred to. So I think that's the purpose of the role, to help ultimately, which is why the campaign, which is launching tomorrow, 4 weeks in, is going to be called Help for Households. Over the next 6 months, we'll be working, as I say, with business to amplify the good work that's already happening and to hopefully do some new deals, which will help the consumer get through this autumn period. But, you know, let's be under no illusions. The purpose of the campaign is to help. You know, the challenge is real, as you also referred to in your intro. I would also add, from the conversations I've been having, that, you know, as Simon also referred to, you know, business also has its challenges. So I definitely see part of my role is to listen, and where appropriate, of course, I'll take back some of the feedback I'm getting from business into number 10.
David, tell us a bit more about Help for Households then. That campaign is, as you say, you've only been there, you know, 4 weeks and it's launching tomorrow. Just what where will we see it? What's it designed to do? What's in it?
Yeah, I feel like a veteran there. So it's been a steep learning curve, I'd say. So what's in it? So Help for Households has four key strategic pillars to it over the next 6 months that we've defined. The first one is summer holidays, which is obvious. So we've been working with some of the leisure sector and some of the retail sector to say, how can we support our people through the next 6, 7, 8 weeks? And it's been incredible, actually. The response we've had from some of the big grocers, from some of the local leisures, including West End Theatre Group, for example. They're doing Kids Week through August, for all of August, where with a paying adult, you know, a child goes free. And if you have three kids, the next two go half price. So, you know, some really, really genuinely meaningful, I think, offers for people to help for the summer holiday period. Obviously, Asda, Morrison's doing, you know, kids have a hot meal for a pound or free with a paying adult, which obviously for some families with obviously school lunches going away over the holiday period will, I think, be meaningful. as well as some of the sort of other leisure sector like bowling companies. So in a very short period of time, I've been genuinely really overwhelmed by the response, especially given we've operated through a PM resignation and change. I think business genuinely sees this need of cost of living for their customers and for their employees, and therefore is stepping up is the genuine sentiment I've had over the last 4 weeks. And then the second pillar is back to school. Obviously, it's a very expensive time for many people, and also kind of will inform confidence, I think, a little bit around real price inflation going into the autumn. Yeah. We're working quite hard around back to school. So we'll have, I think we've got one or two really nice things to announce in later August. And then no surprise, autumn bills, given obviously the pressure of the price cap. And I think, you know, I was talking to Centrica yesterday, you know, and, you know, we're in a bit of a phony war around cost of living at the moment, in the sense that, you know, there'll be a 60% increase in demand for gas and electric as we go into October. So while prices have increased, actually demand obviously is still relatively low. And as you rightly referred to, we're in a heat wave. So I think, you know, that's going to be a really important moment, and being thoughtful around what things we can do at the margin to help, in coupled up with the government support, which is obviously pretty substantial around people's bills in autumn already, I think will be important. And then the last pillar is Christmas retail. No surprise. We'll try and support people. Christmas is obviously a great time, but it's an expensive time. So we're starting to already turn our attention towards Christmas retail as the last pillar of the strategy of help for households, which will, as I say, launch tomorrow.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, David. It's probably an opportune moment for me to bring in Pete. Pete Holland is with us, Customer Director at Anglian Water. David mentioned utilities. A lot of the talk in utilities has necessarily focused on energy for reasons that I think we all know. Now, clearly nobody had the heating on yesterday, but as a water company, it's a very difficult time for you too. Just tell us, you know, as a water company, you're also on the front line of the squeeze. What are you seeing and hearing from your customers, and how do you expect that picture to change as the year goes on, the weather changes?
Yeah, sure. So I guess probably first thing to say is probably what we're seeing in general is probably a little bit different to what we've seen in the last week. So in the Anglian region, we've got kind of 82% of our customers are on meters. So we've got quite a strong connection already between consumption and cost. So the macro picture that we're seeing at the moment is a gradual reduction in consumption. You can see people actively, you know, changing their habits, changing their behaviours to bring their consumption down. Clearly, in the last week or two, that's not quite the case. But in, you know, the big picture is that consumption's come down. So I guess what we're seeing is an increase in those customers who are reaching out to us, which is fantastic. You referenced the kind of Severn Trent Fund. So pretty much all the water companies have got their own kind of war chests of funds. It's not really, it's about customer size. So the Anglian Fund, 65 million for this year alone to help support affordability. So there's some significant funds available for customers who are kind of reaching out and getting that support. So we're pretty well placed. What we're seeing is customers who've historically had affordability challenges reaching out to us, getting every bit of support they can. But we're now seeing kind of new customers who were just, you know, just hanging on previously and now kind of tipping over and, you know, rather than making consistent payments, we might kind of miss a payment every so often. And it's kind of almost like a transient picture that we're seeing develop. And I expect to see more of that through the year. So we're definitely seen kind of an uptake on our our social tariff, so that's good. We've got the funds there right now to kind of accommodate that. I think we're in a fairly good place. What our customers are wanting is simplification, and I think one of the things, and I guess from today, is there's a lot of companies doing so many great things, but the thing we've got to do is make it easy for customers and consumers. So, you know, rather than tell Anglian Water and we know that information about that customer, how can we probably collectively work together and make it easier for consumers? So, you know, tell once and kind of share where it's appropriate. I think that's where I'm seeing more of a groundswell to go, actually, how do you businesses and society really come together to help consumers?
Are you talking about collaboration between utilities companies?
Yeah, absolutely. So, so there's a lot that goes on, but I think there's a lot more to do. So, so I'm working on one of the industry work streams, which is, I'm sure there's many, but through the Money and Pension Service, they're bringing together a lot of different sectors to go, actually, you know, what can you do? What more can you actually do to help consumers? Loads of best practice, But the problem is, there's a lot of signposting to other people. And I'm not anti-signposting. I think signposting is definitely a good thing to do. And if someone's doing something great, we should share that. But how do we make that really easy for people? And then how do you kind of help businesses who perhaps aren't quite as experienced at looking after some of these affordability? And we're focusing on affordability in this conversation because it's almost like the natural go-to for a cost of living. But I guess you just got to lodge it back to it's vulnerability, and customers are vulnerable to the impact of the cost of living crisis. So affordability, absolutely. But, you know, let's not forget that, you know, health and well-being angle that customers are really, really struggling with as well. So we've got to help them financially, but financially isn't it. We've got to go much wider than that.
Pete, I hope this is an okay question to ask. I wonder if these kinds of words, affordability, vulnerability, support, they're not words that I would typically associate with the way that companies talk about how do we maximize customer value. You know, how do we, it's not always, you don't think in terms of this. Is that a material shift? Maybe it's always been a little bit different because what you're selling is water, which is, you know, an essential thing. Has it changed? Does it feel different, the conversation around the boardroom table?
Yeah, no, it does. So Anglia Water was, I think, was the first water company to change in our articles of association around our social purpose. So it absolutely is there, you know, for our customers and for society. So we've been on that mission for quite some time now as a company. So we've got our kind of vulnerability and affordability programs. We've got, you know, our priority services register to really, really kind of maximize the support. And I guess I'm sure we'll come on to it, but our I guess operating model is do the best that we can do, but actually enable the best for society in our region. And often that is us doing some genuinely some really good stuff, but actually it's working with others. So how do you get, you know, maximum benefits? So a lot more partnership work going on than you know, I've worked for Anglian Water for around 17 years. We are doing huge amounts of partnership working now, more than I've ever seen the company do, really, mm-hmm. to kind of get behind kind of biggest benefits. So yeah, I think it's a material change actually. I think it's something that we're really proud of, and I'm sure many more are as well.
Thanks ever so much, Pete. I'm just going to come back to David before I bring in Paul. Paul's waiting patiently. I can see him sitting. I wondered if he'd frozen for a minute, but he is just sitting still. David, just on this point, when you talked about the pillars of the campaign and the types of things that we've heard businesses already doing, the great thing about those offers, you know, kids eat for a pound or half price tickets or this and that, is that it feels real and it can happen tomorrow. An offer can do that kind of immediate term impact. How much is your campaigning work going to focus on things that are sort of meaningful over the long term, such as structural changes that can bring prices down and that can make things more accessible, rather than something that kind of burns bright and quickly and then finishes after a few weeks?
Yeah, no, good question. So the campaign Health for Households is a 6-month campaign. So, you know, we shouldn't confuse, you know, the work, the long-term government strategy work, the CIMA and the CBI and the Chancellor and the policy direction around this. I think there's two pillars to how you deal with the challenges facing our economy structurally around inflation right now and energy prices and fuel, global fuel prices. I think one of them is the long-term strategic economic policy that I'm sure that will be the new Chancellor, or the current Chancellor remains in office, who will be reshaping some of the policy ideas that obviously CIMA has already referred to. And then there's my work, which I think is a 6-month project to impact consumers, hopefully positively, around some of the key cost of living items that are going to bite, which obviously is retail, which is like back to school, summer holidays, which obviously is the first pillar, obviously autumn bills, and then the Christmas retail crunch, if you like, off the back of the autumn pressure around utility costs. So my campaign is unashamedly focused on the next sort of 6 months. I think it's right that it should be. But I would say a short, medium term mitigation campaign. And then you have the longer term strategic stuff that the Chancellor and the government are working on. I think the other part of my role, which I briefly referred to, which I do think is important, though, is that, you know, over the last 4 weeks, you know, I've had some unbelievably rich conversations with some, you know, some fantastic business leaders we have in the UK who have unbelievable insight into real policy matters that could really make a difference. Because let's not forget, you know, if business rates are at X, ultimately that impacts fuel, food prices at the till of Y. So these are interconnected. So we shouldn't separate a short-term, medium-term campaign to help consumers, which we're, with the fact that actually some of the learnings and some of the feedback that you get from that can absolutely and should inform long-term policy making and thought. Because I think that's a very small example of, you know, a recurring theme of feedback that I've been getting. And I, you know, and I will, you know, probably late September, early October, what I'm minded to do is collate the nearly half a book of feedback that I've now got already into sort of an executive summary and note, and I'll feed that into number 10, because I think there's some very good stuff outside of the campaign that I'm sure bright policy people will want to at least read through. So that's kind of how I see it, if that's helpful.
Great. Thanks ever so much, David. Yeah, the point is absolutely that you need both. I'm going to come to Paul now. Paul Stroud, now your job title is Senior Financial Wellbeing Consultant at HSBC. What is a senior financial wellbeing consultant who works in a bank?
So, no, great. Thank you, Liz. Basically, my role is we run a team that talk to our employees and talk to employees of other businesses as well about their financial wellbeing. So the way I see it and the way we see it is financial wellbeing is the third pillar of wellbeing. So you've got your mental, you've got your physical, and you've got your financial. And actually, it is just as important to have something in place for financial wellbeing, because when people start worrying about money, they start to lose sleep, and it normally manifests itself in some sort of mental or physical issue. So we're out there trying to guide people, really, and communicate all this stuff that people are talking about today and kind of communicate that out to as many people as we can, really. So that's what I do, and that's my job title.
So your stakeholders, if you like, principally are people who work for HSBC, but you also work with people who work for other organisations too, if I understand it right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we run programmes internally where we do webinars that talk about different topics such as cost of living, budgeting, all the way up to investing in pensions. And we have what we call individual financial health checks with our employees. But we offer all of that to businesses and their employees. So started originally with just customers of HSBC, but is now offered to anyone that we can go out there and spread the message to, really.
So, Paul, when times are less hard, the sorts of things you might be talking about are, as you say, am I saving enough in my pension? How can I structure my finances differently? But right now, I wonder if the conversations feel a little bit different from that, and it's a bit more, you know, can I make ends meet? Is that fair?
Definitely. The way I see it, we've got three groups of people generally that we talk to. So we've got the people that have got quite a large disposable income, that even at times like now, the rises in prices and energy bills, etc., are more of an inconvenience. So we still have those conversations. But then you've got people in the middle that previously haven't really budgeted, haven't really looked at their ingoings and outgoings and where their money is spent, are now having to say, right, actually, I need to do something about this, because April's hit me pretty hard. And I know that when the energy goes up again and prices go up again in October, it's really going to hurt. And then we've got the final group of people where they're already budgeting. They already have done that. They've cut back their costs. They look at where they shop and they don't spend money. And now actually they're moving into this position of, I need help. So, you know, that's where we start talking to them about debt charities, some of these great apps like Olio and Too Good To Go, to say, where's that support going to come from now? Because actually, you know, I know lots of people talk about the heating or eating, which at the moment has kind of gone away because we're not putting on our heating. But in October, it's going to hit people, and it's really going to hit people hard. So when you mentioned crisis earlier, I don't think there's a better term for what's happening at the moment. And come September, October, I think it's going to really ramp up, and we're going to see a lot more people that are having issues and are talking to us about, do you know what, actually, I can't afford my bills. What can I do to help myself?
I think that middle group of people that you describe is the thing that's taken, you know, the country most by surprise, at just how many people with good jobs on good incomes who have previously lived very comfortably are now thinking, my goodness, it just cost me over 100 quid to fill the car with petrol. This is really serious now. Paul, what sorts of things are you doing at HSBC? I mean, people don't think of bankers as people who particularly worry about money, but clearly the staff mix at HSBC is, you know, it's not that kind of classic, you know, high rolling kind of person. What sorts of things are you doing to alleviate the pinch for the people in your organisation who are in that category?
So we like I say, we offer our individual health checks for people. So what that does is gives everyone the opportunity to have an open conversation. So we're trying to promote the conversations. A lot of issues start financially when people say, I can't talk to someone about this because it's money. And the stigma for, like you said, people that work in the bank is you should know about money. So we don't want to hear your problems, because actually you should know that, you know, don't get yourself in debt, or you should be budgeting. But the reality is so far away from that. So what we're trying to do is promote conversation. We kind of look at all of the offerings we've done 5-6 years ago to do with mental well-being, and how we said, look, it's good to talk. Let's train our line managers to have these conversations. We're now trying to do the same with financial well-being, to say in your one-to-ones or your regular catch-ups, ask people if they're okay. You know, don't be afraid to say, look, actually, my energy prices have gone up by £150 a month. How are you coping? You know, how are yours? Because once you start those conversations, it's easy to then, well, not I wouldn't say it's easy to solve them, but you start the journey to help people, you know, solve their issues. So we're trying to spark conversation, really, I guess sums it all up.
So it doesn't all come down to sort of handing out money. A lot of it is about supporting people to help them to plan. Because as you say, October is going to happen. It's going to happen to everybody, and it will hurt. But if you plan now, arguably you can mitigate some of the worst impacts of that.
Yeah, definitely. And communicating all of these good things that people are doing. So we've got groups that people put the hints and tips on how to save money, things like the ASDA pound for your children to go and eat. Communicating some of those things. Now, obviously, handing out money and giving pay rises is a great thing to do. And I know that all organisations are looking at how they can do that. And HSBC, I know, are looking at, is there something else we can do, whether we do or not? I don't know the answer to that. But not everyone can afford to do that. So I wouldn't want to sit here and say, do you know what, the best thing to do is give everyone a 10% pay rise, because do you know what? And, you know, as Simon mentioned, businesses are also suffering with the cost of living. You know, their prices are going up. It costs more to buy things, it costs more to sell things. So, you know, giving people money, it does help, obviously, but actually trying to change some of your work, the way you work as well. So are you making people come into the office still? COVID obviously helped with working from home, but have you started saying, right, we want you back into the office? And what financial impact is that having on people? Sometimes it can be the reverse. So we talked about the air conditioning. You know, actually, if you're working in an office, you're not using your electricity. It's not costing you any money to put the kettle on 3 or 4 times a day. But if it's cost you £15 to catch the train in or £20 to park for the day, where does that offset? So I think it's exploring some of those smaller things as well, the changes that you can make as an organisation, that means actually we're not going to force people to come in, or we're going to ask people to come in on certain days where we can offer a free lunch or whatever it may be. Some of those small things make an absolute huge difference in people's lives.
It's really interesting, that point you raise about the offset of the energy consumption at home versus the commute, because we talked about that quite a lot when hybrid started to be a thing that everyone was obsessed with, but mostly in relation to carbon footprint and not so much in relation to the actual cost impact. There's some great tips there from Paul, and I love the insight about how financial well-being is a third pillar of well-being. That's a new way for me to think about that. Pete, let's come back to you. What are some of the key things you're doing to protect customers and employees at Anglian Water, either in the immediate crunch or in the longer term? So let's get some more practical ideas on the table.
Okay, right. Let's start Christmas first then. So for us, it starts with identification, actually. So Anglian's done, we're quite proud of. So we've got a lot of data sharing in place with companies. So it might not sound the most exciting thing to do, but we do data sharing with the credit agencies, with the DWP. So we've got really, really early identification of customers who may be impacted by kind of financial situation. We connect that data with our telephony platform. So if you contact angling water, we can identify you really, really early and say, actually, this customer might be calling about moving house, but actually what we could do is route you through to a dedicated extra care team to then have a more robust conversation with you. So actually, could we go through this extra care assessment with you and go, great, not only will move your house, great, but we could maybe put you on this social tariff. We could also, we've got a kind of the ability through a calculator to say, actually, these are the other benefits, the government benefits that we think you're entitled to that you might not be collecting at the moment. So we do quite a lot in terms of the identification. I think going back to the vulnerability point, I think the strategy for us is around, partnerships as well. So we will interact with, you know, all our customers over a course of a year. We'll, you know, and sometimes that's bill and sometimes that's kind of contact and phone, all sorts of things. But sometimes we're talking about the really, you know, the vulnerable, the hard to reach customers. And, you know, hard to reach is, you know, you've got to try harder. It's not just saying they are hard. It's not their fault. It's just you've got to work harder to reach those customers. And a lot of that we do through partnerships as well. So we are dedicated partnership coordinators. So we'll go out to things like rural communities, rural network, fire brigade. And as different companies in our region are identifying these customers who potentially kind of vulnerable, maybe have affordability challenges, we've got some really, really good kind of data sharing and opportunities for us to engage. So I think, you know, when we're talking about kind of signposts and campaigns, absolutely fantastic. But, you know, we've got to route it into the channels where these customers and consumers are really going to see this stuff. And some of this is going to be face-to-face type stuff. So we've now really upped the ante on things like outreach programs. So starting to go into food banks, you know, Salvation Army type locations. So we can have, you know, while you're here doing kind of your day-to-day business, could we help you? So yeah, there's a lot going on, and, you know, I'm happy to kind of wax lyrical and kind of share more. From an employee perspective, so we set up a cost of living fund and an assistance fund right at the start of COVID, actually. So it started with COVID to say, look, you know, the world's kind of changing quite rapidly. You are going to be impacted as employees of Anglian Water. And we set up a fund for the company, so a pretty substantial fund, so our employees could tap into that and get really, you know, get kind of financial support and kind of money given out. So I guess to Paul's point, we were in a place where we could do some of that stuff, and that was Anglian Water and our employees that contributed to that fund. We've got signposting, you know, wellbeing. We do there's a lot that we'll do for our employees, and I guess probably for us and for most businesses, you know, remembering that our employees are also our customers. So making sure that everything we can do for our customers, our employees absolutely know that as well. They are also our customers, and we can kind of do a lot of this stuff kind of hand in glove.
It's really interesting, Pete. Some of the things you described there, it's kind of good old fashioned marketing thinking. We used to call it touch points back in the day, where you have the opportunity. In the old days, you say, well, when the customer's there, what else can you sell them? And here you're saying, because as Paul quite rightly said, there's a stigma attached to a lot of these things. So if a customer has come to you for something as innocuous as, let's say, a house move, that's an opportunity for you to offer them some other help. And that way of thinking, I think, is really powerful. There's some great questions have come in that I just want to do a quick rat-a-tat-tat to make sure that we're capturing some of the good tips that you're offering. Helen Collishin, I'm not sure if I pronounced your surname correctly. Helen has asked Paul for names again, or maybe links to some of those apps that you mentioned that you've been using. And also Jackie McDermott has asked a question, Paul, which is probably best served to you, about whether there is particular training that you can offer to managers about how to talk to staff about their financial well-being. We've talked a lot about helping managers get better at talking to people about their mental well-being, but are there specific things beyond just asking people, are you okay for money?
No, great. Two great questions. So I'll cover off the apps one first. So the two apps that I mentioned, one is Olio, which is a food sharing app. Now that was built around originally reducing food waste, but actually is perfect in this day and age with the cost of living to help people basically pick up food that supermarkets don't sell at the end of the day. And the other one is Too Good To Go. So a similar theme where you pay a small amount for a mystery pack that comes with, you know, full of things that the shop that you got it from hadn't sold by the end of the day. So two ways that if you use those regularly, and that it's all around the country, you can actually save yourself quite a bit. Things like bread is always on Olio. So if every day, you know, you get a loaf, if you've got children in the house, you know, you haven't got to worry that you can't afford to give them some toast at, you know, at breakfast or whatever it may be. So they're the two apps. The second question in terms of training is something that we've put in place internally. I've not thought about it externally, to be honest with you, but some of the things that we talk about is, again, relating it to yourself and understanding and getting your managers to understand that they don't have to solve the problem. That's probably the biggest thing. That's what stopped people 5-6 years ago with mental well-being, is they didn't want to ask the question, because if someone says, actually, I'm really suffering, they panicked and said, oh, right, how do I help you now? Let me offer you my personal advice. It's not about personal advice. It's about understanding where you can send people. So how your employee can help themselves. It may be debt charities. It may be financial health checks with us, for instance, that just give them that next stage. But really, it's finding a way to open that conversation with the first thing. So I don't want to use all the time up, but just as an example, what I always do is when I talk to my team on their one-to-ones is I say, right, let's cover off your well-being. So let's talk mental well-being, let's talk physical, and let's talk financial. So I don't sugarcoat it and try and hide that I'm talking about. I am talking to you about your mental well-being. I'm talking to you about your physical well-being, and I'm going to talk to you about your financial well-being. And then people get used to saying, well, actually, in my next one-to-one, this is going to come up. So I might mention that I'm struggling, or I didn't want to go to this offsite because it's going to cost me too much, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
hopefully that helps.
That's brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Paula. It very much does. There's another question that I want to put to David, if I may. Somebody who's written in that keen to be able to talk to you, David, about an initiative that they're working on. David, in general, you're working on loads of things at the moment with the campaign that goes live tomorrow. And this is, as you say, it's a sort of 6-month ongoing thing. There are people on the call thinking, how can I contribute? How can I help? What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, first of all, thank you. So what you can do when we launch tomorrow, there's going to be a website on .gov. There'll be a Help for Households website, which will be publicised tomorrow. I can, by all means, we can send a link around after this call. And you can also contact myself and Dimitri at the Cabinet Office directly with any specific offers you have in mind. And there's a team here now in place where we can actually talk to you about it, help you shape it. And you can then also on the .gov website and Help for Households website, if you then become a participant in Help for Households, which, you know, this is for small businesses as well as big businesses, as medium-sized businesses, you can download all the campaign literature, logos, so you can add them to your business's website, social media, as it literally says Help for Households business partner, as a participant in the scheme. And all you have to do for that is literally contact us using those links that I said will be publicized tomorrow, but we can share them after this call on an email or whatever. And then you can literally just contact us and upload what offer you want to put in place. Or if you want to come and talk to us, you know, the channel is open and we would definitely welcome those conversations with you. So please genuinely do. This is for everyone. It's a very broad campaign. It's UK-wide. The barrier to entry is low in the sense that you could already be doing stuff. And if it fits under that Help for Households banner that I just described, which is, as I say, it's an open barrier, if you like. We're here as a sum of the parts campaign to amplify all the good work that already is happening. And if it's a new thing, definitely come and talk to us because we can help you shape it and we will definitely amplify it and hopefully drive footfall to your business or drive loyalty to your customers or, you know, hopefully give you a bit of a brand halo as being part of the Help for Households scheme.
Brilliant, David. That sounds fascinating. And as David says, the campaign launches tomorrow. There's a page on .gov and you can write to David and Dimitri directly, the Cabinet Office as well, if you want to offer help or ask for advice and they can help you shape things. That's fantastic. I'm going to do that really awful cheats thing right at the very end with Pete and Paul. One last, if you do nothing else, do this kind of tip. Pete, perhaps you could give us a sense of, for customers in particular, what's the one big piece of advice that people could take away if they really want to help people cope?
So I think the one of the advice I'd give is about identification to customers and do what you can as a company. But if you're going to sell and post them from somewhere else, have those conversations. So if you can make it as easy and simple for consumers as you possibly can. So warm handovers, data sharing, some of that stuff's easy, some of that stuff's hard. So I get that. But just the best advice I can give is try and put yourself in the customer's shoes, make it easy. That would be the best thing that I could ask people to do.
Brilliant, Pete. And Paul, what about you? One really big tip for helping your employees cope through the next through the cost of living crisis?
I would definitely say the biggest tip for me is communicate what you already offer, because there's a lot of benefits that companies offer that people don't take up. So communicate what you offer, but open those communication lines and kind of look at your well-being offering and say, what are we doing for the financial well-being side of things? Is it as much as what we're doing for the others? And if it's not, then, you know, start having a look at what you can do there. So, yeah, communicate what you offer and open up the lines of communication between the staff is probably the biggest tip I could offer.
Plus one.
David nodding furiously. Yeah. Coming.
I was going to say, plus one on that one. It's things like, you know, it's if you were to do one thing, when you open your web page, have it on your intranet right at the front. You know, it's little things like that. It's exactly, Paul, I really liked what you were saying about making it normal, making conversations around this normal. So it's exactly what we're doing at the CBI as well in terms of employee well-being, financial well-being is a part of that. We've, you know, we're adding services to that about debt advice and all that kind of stuff. There's make it really, really easy and normal for people to have those conversations, because it definitely
indeed,
makes a difference.
Some of the things we learned when everybody was in lockdown and we all felt we were, you know, experiencing similar things, and we started to think better about, you know, thinking about people's full context. Some of those behaviours will be very useful in this too, because heaven knows we're all feeling it. Well, that is it from us, and it's it for this series. We're going to take a break for the summer, but CBI 10, I believe, will be back in September. So in between then and now, obviously a huge thank you to Pete Holland, Paul Stroud, David Butchers, and of course to Simon and Chrissy Aldridge for joining us today, and to you all for watching. In between then and now, I hope you have the opportunity to do a bit of R&R over the summertime, and I hope business thrives, and we will have a new Prime Minister when we return, so that'll be exciting to talk about. All the best to everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, and I hope it doesn't rain too hard. All the best. Bye.
Thank you.